Welcome to Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook, got Eric Nalin. We're going to go through competition that we're going to be tracking throughout the summer and preseason at every position on the team. But make sure you like this video, make sure you subscribe to the channel, and of course, head to InsideTexas.com. We'll have it all in depth there. And Eric, we're going to have everything in depth, recruiting, team, otherwise, anything you need to know about the Longhorns.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fun Friday. Everybody loves Friday. We got some commitment stuff we need to write up after this video, so let's get to it.
We'll get to that, but let's focus on the guys currently on the roster. You wrote earlier Friday morning about the offensive competition at various positions. We'll have some stuff on the defense, too. We'll talk about that, but let's talk about quarterback. Not a competition at the top. We know Arch Manning's going to be starting. But throughout the spring, you wrote about how there's intrigue at the backup quarterback position. That's even been furthered now with the addition of Matthew Caldwell. But what's that competition look like to see who goes in for Arch Manning if, you know, Texas is up 30 or, you know, Arch Manning leaves for a play or 10 or 20?
Yeah, hopefully not more than, hopefully not any unless the scoreboard is right. Stark has done a great job of creating competition throughout the roster, and it's not always for first team. Sometimes it's for second team. And right now there's competition for the backup. You know, Matthew Caldwell comes in with a little bit more experience than Trey Owens and KJ Lacy, but he's not more talented than those guys. Those guys are at Texas for a reason, and he bounced around and ended up at Troy for a reason. You can find talented quarterbacks anywhere. I'm not trying to disparage Troy, but he's not as natural a passer as Trey Owens. He's not as naturally gifted as KJ Lacy, but that experience is a huge plus for him. We know Sark wants a guy that he can go in and trust. And in the case of Caldwell, just somebody that he can joystick. You can run Caldwell. You can have operate the RPO offense, and he'll probably have a little bit more trust just because Sark's seen it on tape. However, Sark is telling his guys to go beat out Caldwell. You know, that's the thing. Go beat them out for number two quarterback. Like I said, no competition at the top, but there's competition throughout the roster. I think quarterback's a good example of that.
I think one thing Ian's written is that when Arch had to come in for Quinn Ewers last year, the offense changed its shape a little bit. Obviously, that's going to happen no matter what when you change a quarterback. But does Caldwell kind of allow Sark to, let's say, Arch has to go out for like four or five plays, kind of keep things going in a pretty similar fashion?
Yeah, I think they'll run the same offense. You know, he actually throws a good downfield ball too off play action too. So if the run game is going, obviously the run game, defenses are going to key the run game if Caldwell comes in because they're not going to fear the pass as much as with Arch, obviously. But you can still run RPOs and you can run them. You know, if Arch is not really hurt, just catching his breath or whatever, getting his ankle taped, who knows? You're probably going to run Caldwell a little bit too, pick up some yards. He's a decent athlete. I don't think that they'd have to change the offense much for Caldwell. I think that's really the value that he had. You know, they went pretty hard to get him over Auburn. And if Hugh Freeze wanted him for that offense, that tells you a lot, too, what Sark can do with him.
Let's move to running back. And there have been a lot of preseason rankings. It's that time of year where teams get ranked, positions get ranked. You even rank Texas players according to, you know, where they stand. Trey Wisner has gotten a little bit of love from some national guys. I think it was Always College Football and Greg McElroy showed him a little love. But you mentioned that, hey, it's not a set in stone thing he's going to be the number one running back this upcoming season.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he's a very tough guy to beat out. He is, you know, and the funny thing is the fresher they keep him, the volume backs behind him. Christian Clark can be a volume back. Jared Gibson can be a volume back. The better he's going to be. You know, last year he was beat to hell. We did not see Trey Wisner at his best late in the season just because he was so fatigued and beaten up. He had nobody really to share the load with him. Jaden Blue was a glorified RB2. He wasn't really used for that role as absorbing carries. Christian Clark and Jared Gibson are going to make Trey Wisner even harder to unseat because he's going to be fresher and won't take the pounding. Plus, he's up five. But at the same time, that is a fluid competition. Trey Wisner, it's not guaranteed that he's a starter. It's just that, you know, they really trust him. They love Trey Wisner. They love all the other stuff that he brings to the table outside of just being able to run the ball. But if you're talking about, who's the most gifted running back on the roster, it's probably Christian Clark. And then Jared Gibson has a whole lot of NFL sort of traits too. I saw Alfred Blue. We both saw Alfred Blue get carries in the NFL. Jared Gibson is much more talented than Alfred Blue. So Jared Gibson, to me, is an NFL back. And Trey Wisner is an NFL player. You know, I think there's a bit of a difference there. I'm not sure that Trey's an NFL back yet. However, we haven't seen the best of him. He's up 5 pounds. He's going to be more explosive this year. He's going to be healthier. But that's just a true 100% competition, wide open to me, even though Trey Weiser's name is at the top.
One of the names that you didn't mention in your article was CJ Baxter. And I know that guy, he's a guy that gets asked about so often. How's he coming along? Stuff like that. Sark back at South by Southwest, one of the places you get Texas football news, I guess, these days. He mentioned everything was coming along well and that they expect him to be ready for Ohio State. That's very open to interpretation. But, I mean, do we have any insight on when CJ Baxter may be not, I don't want to say looking like his old self, but just available and figure into this competition?
You know, we've heard that rehab has gone well for him. We've been hearing that for a long time. Shoot, we were hearing that back in the fall. But, you know, it was a real knee injury. You know, I mean, ACL is a real knee injury, but this is a lot more than that. So there's a lot more variance in how well he's going to look when he comes back. We just don't know until he's out on the field in pads and doing running back things. He looks good in the weight room. He's moving around well. But until we see him or hear about him in August, getting carries, running through that A gap with conviction, I'm just not sure what to expect from him this season. And yeah, he's going to be a full participant in August. I'm sure they're going to have him on a pitch count a little bit, bring him back a little bit slowly. They're going to feel good about the three backs that they have. They're not going to feel the need to rush him back. You know, like if it was last year's backfield of just Weisner and then, you know, kind of a sort of running back in Jaden Blue. They don't have to do that this year. You know, he's going to suit up and travel for Ohio State. Does he get a carry against Ohio State? I wouldn't say that for sure. I would actually lean towards probably not, but I don't know. I'm not going to sell that dude short. Great dude, hard worker. But it was a significant knee injury that he's got to come back from.
Moving on to wide receiver, you mentioned right off the top that Ryan Wingo, DeAndre Moore, despite not getting, I guess, the full allotment of reps for a variety of reasons, eyes, legs, whatever it be. Those guys are at the top of the depth chart. They're going to be on the field almost every single play. But they got to figure out who that third wide receiver is going to be. And there's a lot of guys competing to enter that very, very short rotation.
Yeah, this is a fun one to think about because it kind of, you can see how coaches think. Like, they like Emmett Mosley for a lot of the intangible reasons that they liked Jordan Whittington. You know, they have a very good feeling of what type of player Mosley is despite him being brand new to the program. And they feel that there's a lot of value add that might go a little bit hidden, right? You know, Jordan Whittington was worth way more than 42 catches and one touchdown because of what he did as far as perimeter blocking, mindset that he brought to that room, leadership and all that stuff. At the same time, I don't think he's as naturally talented as DeAndre Moore or Parker Livingstone. So if Mosley's in the slot and Moore's outside, which I expect would be the initial look at it, then you can do the Whittington stuff. But DeAndre Moore is in the slot and Parker Livingstone is outside, you have three verifiable vertical threats and more, a little bit more big playability than you do with Mosley, where it would be more of a ground and pound, I would think. What was his average last year in receptions? Like 12 yards a catch. I think Parker Livingstone is going to be 15, 16 a catch. So just not quite as dynamic with him out there, but maybe a better, more fully functioning, consistent offense. So that's where that's something that the coach is going to have to figure out in August. I'm curious. I can see it going either way.
That'll be a fun one to track. Tight end looks a lot different after the portal addition of Jack Andrews. A lot of expectations are on Jordan Washington this year, kind of hampered during the course of the spring due to a shoulder or collarbone, one of those two injuries. But this one seems a little bit clear cut, but there should be some guys competing to be getting onto the field as a third tight end on occasion.
Yeah, I mean, the room looks entirely different with Andrews, second best tight end that went in the portal after the dude that ended up at Ohio State. Just a massive get. Changes everything. Changes the whole complexion of the room. Now, all of a sudden, Jordan Washington isn't, going to be leaned on to be the number one starter, number one inline blocker, all that stuff. But they're also going to be devastating in 12 personnel as far as receiving threats. It's just a amazing get. I had somebody that was at the last scrimmage I ran into yesterday, and he was talking about, Spencer Shannon looked better to him than he expected. He was catching the ball, moving pretty well, said he still needs to add 20 pounds because he's so dang big. But maybe we sold him a little bit short throughout the spring. I'm not sure. But one thing's for sure, we heard about Emory Winston just about every practice, and then you got Nick Townsend coming in. So if one of those guys brings a specific value add, in the case of Shannon, if he was a better inline blocker than some of the other guys, or if Townsend is just too talented, you want to see that guy run the seam a couple times a game, or if Emory Winston is just too reliable and moves the sticks, maybe those guys can carve out a role There's competition to be the third tight end. However, Sark traditionally plays two, and one of those two, it's going to be injuries most likely, gets the bounty of the targets. We saw that with Jatavion Sanders, then Gunnar Helm. Gunnar Helm waits his term, then it's Helm, and Juan Davis gets, what, 9-10 catches. I think Washington is in for a more quiet year, but he's going to be a superstar eventually, and it's Andrews' turn. You know, he's going to be probably drafted second or third round.
Last is offensive line, and everybody's kind of like, oh, they're replacing four starters. Yeah. The talent pool they have available is all third or fourth year guys, save for one. I wrote about that today. And they feel good about some spots, feel, you know, uncertain about other spots here when they're looking to make a new offensive line fivesome.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting, it's a bit of a paradox because we're talking about so much competition throughout the roster. And then the position that has the most bodies at it, offensive line, you're sitting there going, what are the actual competitions here? What's the real competition? I guess the competition is to be, you know, six, seven, or eight first guys off the bench. You know, the first five seems pretty obvious unless they're bringing a grad transfer with a lot of experience. Other than that, you know, it's going to be Goosby, Neto, Cole Hudson, DJ Campbell, of course, and then Baker. I think that they're in a bit of a hole here as far as depth. They don't seem to be too worried about it. I just don't hear as much as I normally do about the offensive line. I'm a bit curious. I think Nate Kibble could probably play in a pinch. He's probably a year away from being a good player. It's sort of like, you know, Christian Jones was able to play, 3 years ago, but he wasn't quite ready to play. You know, he was out there, he was serviceable, but he wasn't nearly the player he would become. I think Kibble would be rushed a little bit if he was out on the field this season. Beyond that, we're chasing Jaden Chapman, got hurt. We're not sure how severe, but we know he missed some spring. Andre Kojo, can he play guard? Nick Brooks, they love Nick Brooks, but he hasn't really repped at right tackle. They kept him at left tackle, which tells us they probably think that he's the heir apparent to Trevor Goosby. So I think they really need to find that grad transfer if they can, if one becomes available. And I would like to see a little bit more competition. All the bodies there, and you would expect to see here a lot about, oh, somebody's challenging Neto or Brandon Baker doesn't have it on lock, and we just haven't really heard that.
Who does have their spot locked up? Is it just one? Is it Goosby? And, I mean, for Hudson, it's a different case, I feel like, but is there any spot that is locked up?
Oh, yeah, Campbell's locked up and Goosby's locked up, and I would say Hudson's even locked up too. Yeah, that's three. You feel good about that, but then you've got a guy on the right tackle, which is extremely important. At least Arch can see that guy coming if he beats Baker. Arch can see that. And then you've got left guard. Now, you know, they want to be able to pull these guys. They've got a lot. They've got a lot of time put in on reimagining the offensive, the run game, with a lot more pulling, a lot more counter schemes. And, you know, if Neto can do that and pull that off, it's probably going to work out long-term for him. But, you know, we're just not hearing about him making the jump that you would expect for somebody that's been in the program so long.
Just one of those things that happens with offensive line. So before we keep going, got to show some love to Academy. Academy is your home for Jordan Brand. Gear up today, take flight on the court, off the court, and above the court. Unleash your greatness with head to toe Jordan gear for the entire family. Available in-store and at academy.com. Jordan has elevated styles and shoes for everyone and unstoppable value every single day. Plus, Academy offers easy ways to shop and save time, like free one-hour in-store or curbside pickup on academy.com orders. So you could choose also same-day delivery powered by DoorDash. So if you order it by 4, you can get it by 8 p.m. Check out Academy's full Jordan selection at an in-store location or at academy.com. We'll keep going with the defense, and let's go from close to the ball to the secondary. Defensive tackle looks a whole lot different these days with a bunch of transfer additions. Alex January is also there. How does the competition look like at that position, considering they want to have 4, they play pretty regularly, and they'll get 5 and 6 in on occasion?
Yeah, I think they're clearly going to go to 6 this year, like they did in 2022. You had Keandre and Morrow, then you had Byron and Tavondre, then you had Alfred and Vernon. I remember Mike Gundy covering a Mike Gundy press conference, and he was like, "Man, all 6 of these guys are going to the NFL. How do they pull this off?" I think they're going to go to 6 again. It's going to make, you know, the guys that are third string are going to make the first string better, kind of like in hockey. You know, line changes keep guys fresh. I think they have to go that. There's too many players that are pretty similar in quality, and it's just an advantage to play that way. So I'm looking at more of this is one position that we'll look at more as a 3 deep. You know, Alex January was the most talented guy in the spring, which is both encouraging and a little bit, you know, concerning just because he's still pretty young. But, you know, Cole Brevard, very good chance he's going to start. Travis Shaw showed good motor, Hero Canoe. And then you got two new guys that, you know, they're brand new to us. You know, I think LaVon Johnson is sort of a more experienced version of Melvin Hills. And then you've got Murad Watson, who is, you know, you got to think that guy's going to end up starting, but I'm not sure it's guaranteed just because he does have experienced guys ahead of him.
That was what I was about to ask. Do you think Watson kind of jumps a few players, or is he going to have to maybe earn his spot and, you know, make that over the course of the season?
I mean, he's definitely going to have to earn it, but that, you know, he'll have that chance in August. They're going in with their two best starting in Columbus. They don't care who it is. It's going to be the two top guys they have. I mean, there's a path for January to start even. You know, right now, if I had to guess, and this is a total, you know, I'm just throwing darts, I would think it'd be Brevard and Murad Watson, but, you know, I don't know. January had a really good spring. And so, you know, he's going to be tough to keep on the field. He's probably going to definitely be in the first four. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's going to be one of the stories of August, where, you know, our spring and our August intel is going to tell us a lot about the rotations. And there's just so many different combinations they can go and different ways they can look at it. I think number one, the one foregone conclusion is that they're going to play a lot of guys at the position.
Starters almost a formality with this position. So you just want to know who's at the top of that rotation. Edge, this is probably the most fun position on the team to talk about. Colin Simmons is he's going to be an All-American level player. He's going to be at that buck position. They'll move him around some. But what about some of the other guys maybe at the jack position, where Baron Sorrell is leaving a big leadership and ability void? And then, you know, who may be behind Colin Simmons at that weak side spot?
Yeah, you know, there's always – they have so many talented players. There's always some variable that we have to account for. Like, you know, Trey Moore. I mean, Trey Moore is still sort of an edge. He's a linebacker. I don't know. It seems like he's going to be a point-and-shoot weapon for him. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do with him. But, you know, you would expect if something happened to Colin Simmons, heaven forbid, I would think that Trey Moore would just go straight back to that position and it would be his. But as it sits, if they're moonlighting with him around, you know, trying to use him as a sub-package weapon, you know, they could play Zena Umiazulu behind Colin. That might be my first pick as the backup behind Colin. Lance Jackson got looks there. They could play Vosick on either side of the at either edge position. They just have a lot of things they can do. Lance Jackson played both sides of it. Justice Terry was playing the jack at times. Ethan Burke is going to start, of course, and then behind him, it kind of depends on Colton Vosick's health. If Colton is healthy, I think he's going to – I think he'll back up his former high school teammate. Umiazulu could play that side as well. Jackson could play that side as well. So all these guys are going to be, you know, competing for, you know, who's going to be second team. I tend to think it will be Umiazulu behind Colin, unless they just go with Trey Moore there. And then behind Burke, I think it's going to be Vosick, but – you know, Zena's going to challenge there. Lance is going to challenge there. They've got to get Justice Terry on the field some way. You cannot have that much capital sitting on the bench. So, yeah, I mean, we got our work cut out for us in August trying to figure it out. But these are all good problems to have.
Should be a lot of fun. Are we underselling Colin Simmons? Is that possible?
Well, you know, I think this is going to be his best college year. I think it's going to be better than his junior year, because it's not quite the year where everybody catches up to him and they just start ruining their whole offensive game plan just to block him, you know, put three guys on him or whatever. They're still going to try to think they can get by with, you know, treating him like a good player, but maybe not a great player. And, you know, I think he's going to have 15 sacks this year.
That should be a lot of fun to track. Linebacker, another very, very talented group. The top two, three is kind of known, but what's going on behind him? We know Anthony Hill, another All-American level player. Leonga LaFalle's made a lot of progress. Like you mentioned, Trey Moore, point and shoot here, but there's transfers, there's talented freshmen, there's a second-year player making waves. What does this position look like maybe once you get past the top two?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure about the top two yet. Just because we heard about Brad Spence so frequently during spring ball, it might turn into one of the best competitions of all at camp would be Leonga versus Brad. You know, Brad really opened my eyes as far as, you know, how often we heard about him, you know, doing well in coverage. I was not expecting that. If you watch him and if you're familiar with him in high school, he's a downhill player. He's an off the edge player. You can do a lot of the things with Anthony Hill, you know, as far as blitzing him or moving him up on the line of scrimmage, bring pressure. But then we started hearing about him being, you know, pretty fluid, surprisingly fluid for his build. He's kind of a muscled up guy. And so now I'm thinking, man, Leonga's got a battle on his hands as much as we're hearing about that. Now, Leonga's by far the best linebacker they have in coverage. It's Leonga and Tyanthe Smith are the best in coverage in that regard. But Brad Spence made a lot of noise, and I think there's competition to see who starts alongside Anthony Hill. I still expect it to be Leonga. He's a very complete player. But, man, Brad made a lot of noise.
What about for someone like Bo Barnes, freshman, earned a five-star ranking from On3? Is he just going to be in Anthony Hill's shadow and wait a couple of years, or is he someone that could maybe contend early in his career?
Anthony Hill is too good for him to wait a couple of years behind him. You know, the good news for Bo is that Anthony's going to be gone. He's got Anthony who he can absorb every last bit of information from, not just information, but how he goes about being a college football player, which he's done since the second he got on campus. But then Anthony's going to split town. And so now it's Bo Barnes. If Brad Spence doesn't come back, you know, if Brad has sort of a breakout that maybe we don't quite expect, but it's possible. It could be Bo and Leonga starting in 2026. I tend to think that Bo's going to play a ton in 2026. This year, I think he's going to play more in mop up time. I don't think he's going to redshirt because I think he's too talented overall. They're just going to get him out on the field and get him ready for 2026. But it is sort of a wait and see year for him, just because of all the bodies experience in front of him.
Let's start moving into the secondary. We'll go to star, and that's a position that some intrigue at some other spots may have resulted in. I don't want to say less than ideal, but a different lineup than we may see over the course of preseason camp. But we'll look at some of the guys there. There's guys like Wardell Mack, Jelani McDonald could end up there. We heard a lot of great things about Grayson Littleton over the course of spring football. Is this something that we're just going to have to wait on, considering maybe something like Derek Williams, what Jonah looks like, just the interplay between this position and safety?
Yeah, I mean, the one factors against the other as well. I wrote an article the other day, the year before the year for these certain players, and I had Wardell Mack on that list just because I don't think he's going to start this year at star. It would go against everything we know about the staff to play such an inexperienced guy at a, mentally challenging position. You know, star is a very taxing place to play. Look how much better Jahdae Barron got when he went to corner, and he was a good star. And, Andrew Bakuba too, it tells you a lot when safety's easier to play than star. And so I don't think they're going to go into the shoe, with Wardell Mack starting, making his first career start at a tough position. I tend to think it's going to be Jelani McDonald. You know, he played there some in his final, he played there some in the scrimmage to end spring ball. And I think that's foreshadowing. It's still very interesting because Wardell Mack and Grayson Littleton were, having a pretty good back and forth, despite Grayson Littleton being so young. He was impressing and turning a lot of heads, but it's still you can't see a true freshman playing there either. Like it's a very tough position. So, I tend to think, it's going to be McDonald. I think they want to get their five best defensive backs on the field. And obviously if Derek Williams is healthy, that's Taft for sure. That's Williams for sure. And that's McDonald for sure. At the same time, if Gilbo gets beat out by Kobe Black, or if McDonald needs to stay at safety, they can always put Gilbo at star. So, the story hasn't even begun to be written at star, I don't think.
What should we expect from Jonah Williams? Right now he's starting in left field for a baseball team trying to win a national championship. We know he has a lot of natural athletic ability and is just also a really good football player, has instincts. Is he someone that could contend for starting job, or maybe his role be a little bit more specialized this year?
No true freshman starting on this team. It's too experienced, too talented. I think they're going to have more of a dime package this year. We saw it last year a lot on third down. They might play it even more this year. They found quite a bit of success with it. We know that Johnny Nansen likes to flood the field with DBs. Dwayne Aquino, that's going to be music to his ears. What better way to get a five-star talent on the field, acclimated, get his feet wet, than putting him out there with five other DBs that know what the heck they're doing? You can let him just go out and be an athlete. I tend to think he's going to play quite a bit in dime. I don't think he's going to start this year. I don't think he's even going to be in the four-man safety rotation, though that could change. But he's got talented guys that have a head start on him. Not only did he miss spring, but, Jordan Johnson-Rebell was there all year last year. Xavier Filsomee is coming along. Taft and Trent starter Derek Williams, if he's healthy, is going to start. If he's not, Jelani McDonald and Trent starter. So he's got a bit of a tough path to the field outside of the fact that we expect more dime. And that's a perfect way to acclimate him. And then there's a decent chance he's starting in 2026.
One of the key things at safety seems like Derek Williams' health, kind of along with how we're looking at CJ Baxter and his injury. If he's healthy, if he's full go, is that spot alongside Michael Taft his at the safety spot?
Well, I think so, as far as because that's how you get the best five on the field, because you wouldn't put Derek Williams at star. He doesn't have any experience there. So that just makes the most sense. And, you know, he had it was a run-of-the-mill ACL. They feel good about him coming back. I think he's actually going to be cleared in June. So he'll be out there when they do team 7-on-7, that sort of stuff. At least that's the last I heard. I'll have to check back on that. Yeah, that's the best way to get the you know, they want to get their best five on the O-line. They want to get their best five in the secondary. And so the best way to do that is Williams comes back healthy, McDonald plays star. I'm not sure he wants to play it, but that's what would be best for the team.
For some of those younger safeties like Jordan Johnson-Rebell, like Xavier Filsimi, and even someone like Zelus Hicks, different skill sets, obviously, than Jonah Williams, but they have a little bit more experience, save for Hicks, in that secondary. Where are they trying to figure into the conversation?
Well, you know, let's assume that McDonald goes to the star, and then you're looking more at a two deep at safety. Taft, of course, Williams, of course. Jordan Johnson-Rebell would be safety number three, and then I think Filsimi would be safety number four. We probably don't talk about Jordan Johnson-Rebell enough. To me, he's like a 2.0 of Chris Brown, a better Chris Brown, and Chris Brown plays some pretty dang good football for Texas. I think he's a better version of that, a little bigger, a little faster, maybe a little headier. And, you know, Rebell's a little bit faster than I think any of us gave him credit for as a recruit. You know, he's running up there in the 21 and a half mile per hour range, which is good for a safety, especially a guy known for being smart and physical. So I think he's a guy that's going to punch above his weight. And I can see, and also, and he can also play star in a pinch too. You know, just kind of depending on what the offense is throwing at him. If you have a run based offense, you know, you might want that guy mixing it up in the box. He's a tough kid. So I expect him to play a pretty good amount this year. And then Xavier Filsimi, I think he's going to play too. You know, they like to – they'll rotate their safeties. You know, we saw that a lot. We've seen that a lot the last few years, actually.
Let's go to corner. We feel like Manny Muhammad's going to have one spot. Jalen Gilbo should have the other, but there are guys like Kobe Black, Santana Wilson, Warren Roberson, even someone like Cade Phillips who's going to try to figure into this conversation. Are those top two locked in, or is there going to be competition maybe to succeed Jadae Barron?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, Manny Muhammad's going to get drafted probably, you know, late first, second round. He's probably going to run a faster 40 than anybody thinks, just because that's how Torrey Becton is rolling these guys off the assembly line right now. So he's got one locked up. And then Gilbo, there's a lot of intrigue about Gilbo. And, you know, I don't think fans are giving him enough respect. You know, I'm not saying it's the transition of Barron to from star to corner, but I think he's going to have, you know, I think he's going to play better at corner than he did at star. And he played pretty decently at star as well. It's just, you know, in that secondary, who were you going to pick on? You know, sometimes they just went. His worst play is actually to me where he took some bad angles against the run. I actually thought he did really well, you know, against the pass and coverage. You know, they tend to defer to experience, and he's got more experience than Kobe Black. Kobe Black is more naturally gifted. That's pretty obvious. Cade Phillips might be the most naturally gifted cornerback on the team, but he's just got so many people ahead of him. And then, you know, Warren Roberson, we're starting to hear really good things about the light bulb coming on for him, showing a little bit more maturity, a little bit more focus. I tend to think how it's going to play out. Roberson will back up Muhammad, Black will back up Gilbo, and then those guys will naturally ascend to be starters in 2026. But, you know, it doesn't always work out how it might look pretty on paper, but I'm not sure it's going to work out that way. Kobe Black has something to say about that in August. And Warren Roberson, if he's the second best cornerback, he's not going to back up Muhammad. He'll just be over there starting at the boundary corner.
Luckily for Jeff Banks, it kind of feels like all the specialists are pretty set. You got your long snapper, you got your punter, you got your kicker. Don't think we need to go too far into that. But I think it's worth mentioning one extra guy. And that's Ryan Niblett, who's gone back and forth a little bit between offense and defense, not just in his career, but even during this spring. He's someone that you've written about a ton and just how valuable he is to this program. And what role do you see him finally just starting to entrench a spot and earn some playing time at?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a little dubious on what we've heard about him being sort of a gadget guy, just because Sark hasn't really leaned into that. You know, Keelan Robinson did some intriguing things, and you know, Silas Bolden did some intriguing things, but they haven't really leaned into that. When you have so many playmakers, you know, anytime you give the ball to Keelan Robinson, it's not going to Roschon Johnson. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you're just taking the ball out of somebody that's got a really high NFL ceiling. You know, a handoff to Ryan Niblett is something that, you know, could have been a swing pass to Ryan Wingo or something. You know, I mean, we haven't seen him lean into that, but they absolutely love Ryan Niblett. They love his speed. They love his tenacity. You know, they think he's an absolute pure football player. You know, it's kind of like if you went pure football players on the team, it might be, you know, Niblett, Trey Wisner, those guys. The coaches absolutely love him. You know, I think he's going to be a punt returner. That's, he ended spring as the number one punt returner. There's a decent chance he'll be gunner on punt teams. He's going to be a special teams demon is what I expect. You know, Keelan Robinson was schemed a lot to be the guy that got the block. You know, it wasn't just happenstance that he got the block. Jeff Banks draws up these plays. He schemes it. Niblett will probably be the guy that they scheme for those opportunities. As far as just, you know, how many touches he's going to get a game, I don't know. But I do know that they're trying to figure out ways to get him more involved. They just love his overall mindset, his team first mentality. And then on top of it, he's the fastest player on the team.
Always fun to have those guys on the team. Went through the entire team, all the positions. Thank you for watching. Make sure you like this video and subscribe to the channel. Of course, also head to InsideTexas.com. We'll have even more complete insight, not just on the preseason and training camp, but also any big recruiting news that could happen soon. So, Eric, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. This has been Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.